with Armand DeMille.
Hi everybody, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. Here today to bring you the answer. Yes, the absolute answer. The answer to having a good relationship. Wouldn't that be a nice thing? Wouldn't it be wonderful to be able to say, how do I choose and find the right person so that I could feel loved and be loved and love effectively for the rest of my life? Well, there's a good question for you. It's very confusing. There are a few different perceptions about that. About what makes a good relationship. You see, I cannot really tell you how to have a good relationship, but I can tell you how not to have a bad one. Yep, my friends, here I am on The Positive Mind with you, Armand DeMille, and I wish I had positive statements to just say to you, here's how you have a good relationship. Pick somebody who's got brown hair. It doesn't work that way. Nope, there's a couple of things, there are a lot of factors that go into having a good relationship, and it's really, by relationship, I mean an ongoing, intimate relationship that can go through hard times but survive, you know? Real tough. Even though one would imagine, wait a minute, why should it be tough? Because it's so much fun and it's so wonderful, it's easy to have a good relationship. No, it's easy to have a bad relationship. So, I thought what I would do is bring you as many things as I could about the kind of relationship stuff that doesn't work. That I know for sure in my practice as a psychotherapist, as a family and couples counselor, I want to bring you positive coupling. Yep, that's the idea. I want you to have positive coupling. I want you to find another person who you are going to be with, or take the one you have and make it better. Positive coupling. But how do you do positive coupling? Well, one of the things you got to do is get rid of the negative coupling. Person came back to me a little while back and said, how do I know who I am? How will I ever discover who I am? And I said to them, the only way to find out who you am is to stop being who you're not. The only way to find out who you are is to stop being who you're not. Now, what does that mean? That means the things that you are doing that don't feel like you that you are doing, if you continue to do them over and over again, you'll never discover your true self. Where do people find their true self? They find it on vacation. They go on vacation and you suddenly get away from all the trappings and you have this sense as you kick your feet in the beach, you know, in the sea, and you're just kind of walking along aimlessly and you say, wow, this feels terrific. I could really feel connected to myself. Because for a while, you've stopped being who you are, who you're not. Armand DeMille here with you. Well, one of the things about who we're not comes up in relationships. And that thing particularly has to do with what they call codependency. We are going to talk about codependency. Yep, we have to talk about it. Now, this is a concept, codependency. Comes out of a few different places. Alcoholics Anonymous, 12-step programs, so on and so forth. But let's look at codependency. Now, here's the idea. The idea is if we examine codependency, if we discover that we are codependent, we're going to have to get rid of it. No, you may like being codependent. Let's just understand it. What is codependence? Well, here are some of the things that you could say about codependence. If I were being codependent, I would say my good feelings about who I am stem from being liked by you. If you don't like me and show me that like, I don't feel good. So my good feelings about myself stem, and this is a very important word, stem. The basis of my feeling good is you liking me. That's one description of a sign of codependency. Here's another one. My good feelings about who I am stem from receiving approval from you. Almost the same as the first, you know, but if I get your approval, I feel okay. I like myself. If I don't get your approval, I don't like myself. See, now you can understand why they call that codependency, because really on the inside, ideally, we generate our own like of ourselves. But if I depend on you to like me, if your approval determines whether I like myself or not, that's codependency. Think of yourself as a child when your father was angry at you or didn't approve of you. How hard it was to feel good. Think of yourself when your mother gave you a strong disapproval. How that cut through to you, or even one of your teachers, when they didn't like you or like what you did. How deeply that could cut into your feeling of well-being. Well, that's the way children are. Hopefully, as an adult, we feel good about ourselves, and if someone disapproves of us, we could get by. And we could feel okay. But one of the signs of codependency is that my good feelings about who I am stem from receiving your approval. Stem from is a very important word, because it means the birth of it is, the bottom of it, the origin of my good feelings is your approval. You have to like me. You got to smile when you see me. Here's a third sign. Your struggle affects my well-being, my serenity. My mental attention focuses on solving your problems or relieving your pain. I am involved in you, your struggles, your pain. That's all I care about. I kind of ignore myself. Another symptom is my mental attention is focused on pleasing you. Now, this is for the pleasers. There are pleasers. Codependency takes a few different forms. One form of it is this needing to please the other person. And your mental attention, you think about it all day long. How do I please? How do I please? How do I please? How do I make them happy? The other level of this is even if you're not asking for their approval or you're asking to be pleased, you're asking to please them, a substitute for pleasing is protecting. My mental attention is focused on protecting you. You see a lot of couples where one couple seems to be protecting the other couple. The other person, one person is protecting the other person. And they seem to be protecting them. They don't want them to go through any rough times. They take care of them when they're trying to do something for themselves. They are protecting them like a parent. Now, in this protection, you'll often see a lot of nastiness. You know, like they're being a little critical with you while they're protecting you. Don't walk out there. I don't want you to get hurt. Don't cross the street. You know, don't. And they treat you kind of like a child, but their energy is focused on protecting you. The person who is the protector, in this case, is the codependent. Interesting, huh? You think, well, it's a powerful position. How could I be codependent? No. The person who is dependent on getting the other person, protecting the person, is a codependent. Here's another way. Even though you may not be pleasing the other person, Your mental attention is focused on manipulating the other person to do it the way you want them to do it. Let's say that you want to get a better security alarm in your house. Instead of going for it directly or instead of hooking it up, you ask yourself, how am I going to get him or her to agree to buy this thing? So I'm going to tell them, I saw somebody lurking around the house the other day, and I'm not sure the person was completely dressed. You do something to manipulate, to get that person to do things the way you want them to do it. Another sign of codependency is that you feel really good when you solve somebody's problems. The person has a problem, you solve it, and it really boosts your self-esteem. The rest of the time, you don't feel like much in the world. You know, you may feel like you're not really doing well, but you're making your husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, you're solving one of their problems. What is it? You can't get the car fixed? I'll get it fixed for you. What is it? You can't do this? I will do it for you. And it makes you feel good to do something for the other person. Another sign of codependence. This is Armand DeMille. In case you just tuned in, we're talking about establishing positive relationships. We're talking about positive coupling. And we're starting off with an idea of what are the kind of relationships that may be questionable here. And one of them that's questionable is what they call a codependent relationship. It's a very interesting thing. Here's another thought. Not only do I need to solve your problems, I need to relieve your pain. That my self-esteem is bolstered by relieving your pain, and that's especially true when you have someone you're related to who is depressed, and you're going to make them feel good. You're going to cheer them up. You're going to take care of them so they step out of their pain. And that makes you feel like a viable, vibrant human being. That's another sign of codependency. A lot of therapists are like that, in a way. You know, they don't know how to deal with the pain. They have patients come in, psychotherapists, doctors, you know. They have a patient come in. Well, doctors don't care as much nowadays, I think. They just adjust the medication. Nah, there are some good doctors out there. But the main thing is that you cannot feel bad. I have to relieve your pain, and if I relieve your pain, I feel good about myself. I wonder about physicians nowadays, since mostly what they're doing is prescribing medication. They don't think about the fact that they're going to really do something. You know, they're going to say, all right, well, you take XYZ, and then you combine that with this, and you combine it with that, and then you come back and say, oh, great, I'm taking the Zoloft now and the Anafronil, and I'm taking the Ambien at night, and then I'm taking a little Proscar to keep myself going. And you put all these together, and the doctor says, and how are you feeling? And you say, oh, I feel a lot better. So I guess he says, well, I feel better about myself now because I've given you all these things because you're feeling better. I feel better because you're feeling better. And if you happen to be chronically ill or chronically depressed, I don't feel better. So a lot of people, a lot of practitioners, a lot of physicians, a lot of therapists will reject a patient who doesn't get better because it makes them feel bad, because they can't feel powerful. In codependency, in relationships with one other person, a person very often will feel bad, or will feel better if they could make you feel better. That's their thing. I've got to make you feel better. Okay. So let's look at other signs. I don't have any, if I'm truly codependent, I put aside all my hobbies, all my interests, I don't hang out with my friends anymore, my time is devoted to taking care of your hobbies and your interests. That's it. If you're a fan of, if you collect Bob Dylan, then all I'm going to do is help you get parts of Bob Dylan. I'm going to help you get records. I'm going to get music. I'm going to get whatever it is. If your hobby is tree collecting, I'm going to help you get trees. Whatever it is, you get involved in their hobbies, not your own. Another sign of a codependent relationship, and as I said, this is not a judgment. These are signs of a codependency that may or may not work. According to many people, they believe that a codependent relationship is, pardon this word, it's a big one, toxic. They say, yes, that's a bad thing, you should not be codependent. You make your own choice. So here's another one now. My social circle diminishes as I involve myself with you. Did you ever notice that? You get in a relationship with somebody, you stop seeing your friends. You stop hanging out with your friends. You stop going to parties. The more involved you get with the other person, even if they're not taking your time, the more you exclude other people. Another sign of codependency. Here's another, my friends. I put my values aside in order to connect with you. Yes, I understand. You have a certain value. Yes, I understand. You are somebody who likes to vote along with the Republican Party. Yes, I understand. You think Dick Cheney's a swell guy. I'm not going to say anything about it because I want to get along with you. Or vice versa, you know what I mean? If you don't agree with the other party and you go along with the person, it's just the same. You give up your value system. You change your value system. So you're out with somebody who says, if you're somebody who doesn't believe, and I mean believe in eating meat, you know, if you don't believe in it, if it's an actual belief, but you change your mind when you're with the other person because they kind of won't like you as much if you won't join them in the barbecue. You know what I mean? Change your values. We all do it. I mean, I'm not saying this is so pathological. I'm saying, you know, if you got rid of all codependent relationships, I'm sure you'd have a lot of single people. But see, people like to make up rules. And the 12-step programs, which deal a lot with addictions, and people who are truly dysfunctional, people who are hanging out in relationships where people are mean to them, you know, and they try to help you get out of it, and they say to you, okay, let's give it a name. We'll call it codependency, and that'll help you see. Well, there's a certain validity to that, you know. It's good to understand. Here we are. Here's another sign of a codependent approach to relationships. I value your opinion and way of doing things more than I value my own opinion and my own way of doing things. I value it. I actually think you're better at everything than I am. That's usually a sign of a codependent relationship. The quality of my life has a direct relationship to the quality of yours. In other words, if you're not doing well financially, and you can't afford things, I could feel myself suffering financially. Now, that's, of course, if you're in a relationship where you're both sharing money, that makes sense. But if you're depressed, I get depressed. If you're happy, then I'm happy. So this kind of quality of relationship is dependent on your quality. That's another sign of that kind of fusion that they call codependency. And this is Armand Mill. In case you just tuned by, we're here to bring you things to help you understand a little. We're talking about codependent relationships. We'll take your calls a little later if we get the time. Now, here's another sign of a codependent relationship. When your clothing and personal appearance is dictated by the other person's desires, because you become a reflection of them. Or vice versa. Your clothing, you know, the person says, you know, to her man friend, I have to groom you because I can't have you going around with your hair coming out of your ears, you know, because it's a reflection of who I am. You know, you have to wear better clothing, he says to her. I don't want you. I want you to wear certain things. That's kind of codependency. My desires dictate your personal appearance. Now, of course, we all want to please each other. You may want to wear something for the other person. You know, maybe you look really cute in a baseball cap turned sideways because you know it turns your mate on. That's okay. But if you took the cap off and they said to you, you look terrible, I don't want to see you that way, that's a different story. All right, here comes another. Any of these sound familiar to you, friends? Any of you, you've been in the middle of any of these? Have you ever found yourself dealing with these issues? Now, here's a big one. It has to do with emotions. I am not as aware of how I feel as I am aware of how you feel. This is a real sign of that kind of dependency. I'm not aware of what I feel. How am I feeling? I'm feeling sad. I'm not sure. But I can tell you how you feel. I could take in one look. I could look at you and tell you what's going on for you. That's a kind of codependency. In fact, that's part of the reason why people get involved in codependencies. You lose yourself and your own feelings in the other person. And then interesting, so if the other person doesn't feel good, you know, you're not even aware of what you feel. You're aware of what they feel. Another sign of codependency, we've got four more. The dreams that I have for my future are dependent on you. I've always wanted to have a house. Okay, I wanted to have a house, and now you're my mate. In order for me to have a house, you have to join me in this fantasy. Now, a non-codependent relationship would be that the person who wants this would say, I'm going to save my money, and if I really want my own house, I'm going to buy my own house. And then I'm going to see how my mate goes along with that. And if we've got to live a little separately for a while, where I live in one place and you live in the other, if this is that important to me, I'm going to make it happen. Last, the, or penultimate, sign of a codependent relationship, my fear of your anger. Get this, you're afraid of the other person's anger. My fear of your anger determines what I say or do. Just like my fear of your rejection determines what I say or do. I'm so afraid you're going to reject me. I'm so afraid you're going to get angry. I am so reluctant to encounter your rejection or anger that I will talk to you a certain way or do things in a certain way because I'm just afraid of it. And then here's the final one. The final one is the only way I could ever feel safe in this relationship is if I give. I give as a way of feeling safe in this relationship. That's it. These are the signs of codependency, my friends. If you just tuned in, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind. We try very hard to bring you things, and we're looking at the things that we could examine. Now let's listen to whether or not we want or don't want codependent relationships. That's to think about. I was with a friend the other day, and we were talking about relationships, and we said, okay, so now what are you looking for? And she said, I'm looking for an adult male. I want a man who's an adult, not a boy. I keep finding men who are boys. I keep attracting men who are boys. They seem to be so like children with their mother. Of course, she's a powerful person. So she seems to find that man after man winds up being some kind of a child. And by child, I mean they're afraid to confront directly. They do things in a backhanded kind of way. Even though they may be heroes and fine people, they just really are not mature. Mature like an adult. How many of you, especially, how many of you women are looking for an adult man? Did you give up? Did you think there is no such thing? Did you think that men no longer exist? You think you've got to be lucky that all the good men are married? And if you got to either catch somebody on a when they're getting divorced, or after their partner dies. I know somebody who did that. She opened a grieving business for husbands who are grieving so she could meet men. Yep, successful too. So is this, it's true, it's absolutely true. So is this a, is this the way that you find it, or do you give up, you know, do you really give up? Do you give up if you're looking for a man who's mature enough to be able to hold his own and not be some namby-pamby kind of guy who can't tell you when he gets angry, can't stand up for himself, is afraid to feel pain? The real component here is men, not men meaning the Marlboro man, but an adult male has one thing that young men don't have. He's willing to feel pain. Willing to face pain. Not run away from pain, not avoid pain. An adult differs from a youth, youth meaning adolescent, child, boy, in that he is willing to feel it. He's willing to go through it. He's willing to go through pain, including the pain of losing you, just to hold his own integrity. So that's quite a difference. Hard to come by, hard to find adult men. So here's a question for you. We did a series of 10 programs, 10, on called About Men. If any of you have ever been confused about men and what makes them tick, give yourself an early Christmas present. This series is phenomenal because it goes into the basic underpinnings of men and what makes them tick. This thing that men have, that's one thing. But now we go to the adult woman. It's a funny thing. You don't hear as many men saying, I'm looking for an adult woman. They don't say it. They may mean it. They may want it. Like, I know a lot of men who love strong women. They say, I want a woman who could hold her own. I want a woman who could be strong. But usually when they say that, it's not so much that they want an equal partner or they want an adult woman. They are just looking for the opposite of a weak woman. They can't stand a woman who's in pain. They can't stand a woman who feels bad, who feels terrible. So they want a strong woman who's immune to pain. And they usually have mothers who are sick mothers or depressed mothers or weak mothers. So they want somebody the opposite of mom. They want somebody who could hold their own, who could be powerful, who could take care of things. Is that an adult? I'm not so sure. It's really the opposite. Men do not express as much the desire to find an adult woman partner, and of course I realize I'm not including same-sex relationships, but I am. I mean, you extrapolate from here. But what they're looking for is they're looking for a person who, I guess, either they want a strong woman or they want a woman who is submissive. They want one or the other. But women specifically say, I want a man. I want a man who is strong and sensitive and who is not mean. Such a thing, people being mean to each other, you know? It's such a thing. It's such a funny thing. You wonder about it in relationships. You wonder, how did you get to this mess? You know, when you're a kid sometimes, you look at your parents and you look at them hating each other. And you hear them hurting each other and you say, how? How? What is that? Is that what love is? So that's where we learn it from. And then we try to shape some ideas. So we watch television and we see the Brady Bunch. And we go, oh, that must be what love is. Or you watch some other TV program. You watch Will and Grace. And that must be what love is. And you try to figure out what love is. Or you look at family life and you say, TV family life. All of those are very difficult. It's hard to figure out who you could love and who you can't love, but we're going to help you figure this out today. We certainly are. We're going to be going into this for quite a few weeks. and just help you not be as mean to each other. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to take a short station break, and when we come back, we are going to continue with this, my friends.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
Okay, you can bring up your music now.
Yeah, that is Lady Day, Billie Holiday with, believe it or not, Lester Young and Roy Eldridge. Don't know who's on piano there. But we know for sure that it's the other two, and that's Billie Holiday singing Mean to Me. Mean to Me. Why must you be mean to me? Well, relationships are a difficult thing, you know, my friends. When you're having a relationship and you're trying to make it work, this is what you run into. You try to look and you said, what is a relationship? Do you think anybody gives you a class when you're a kid? Did anybody send you to school and take, you got to take relationship 101? You know, why not? We're going to have marriage 101, and then we're going to have sex 101. Then we're going to have sex 102, or sex, you know, advanced sex, right? And then advanced marriage. And then pregnancy, childbirth, parenting, all that stuff. Like, why don't they have classes on that? What's the matter? What are we trying to do? No, we're going to teach you geometry. No, we're going to teach you world affairs. No? Well, those are important, too, but where do you find love? How do you find love? What's the biggest priority? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Working for an education, so what I hope we do here is teach you some of the things that they should have given you in Relationships 101. And the thing here is to understand that nobody has a definition of what love is. Let's look at some of the ways to see love. Some of you have been so damaged in childhood that you could never, ever imagine finding anybody to love you or that you would love. Kicked around, beaten, if not abused, if not verbally abused, denigrated, ignored, any one of those things that parents do as part of their reflection of their frustrations in life. That may have happened to you, and you're so, you know, you're like a battered kid. So I think what happens to eventually, and I've described this before, as a child, Just a picture a young child, like 2 years old, wearing a white T-shirt that's dirty, and it's in the crawl space. Crawl space between, you know, one floor and another in the houses. There's this little space that maybe is about, a foot and a half, 2 feet in between. And the kid's just crawling in there because there's no other safe place. And the kid's crawling through and trying to find some place and maybe crying and weeping. And there appears in that very crawl space another kid. Same thing, damaged, wounded, hurt, dirty. Wearing a different kind of T-shirt. Another white, ripped. So you can see it, right? Now the two of you see each other. And you think at first, maybe it's a rat. Maybe I should stay away. But no, you see a child. And you see their eyes. And you see the eyes that are glazed over by tears. And so you move forward. You know they're not going to hurt you. And you reach out your fingers. And that person reaches out theirs. Maybe that's what love is. Maybe it's just finding the other kid in the crawl space. You know what I mean? And maybe not. Maybe it's bigger than that. Maybe you're not so damaged. Maybe you're just trying to find somebody to give you a plus for your minus. You know, we all have a lot of minuses in our personalities, and we just want somebody who's going to be a plus. Here's a definition I heard. This is very interesting. That relationships are based on collaborating defenses. Get this now. Two people get along, and you both, what makes you get along? The collaboration of your defense mechanisms. Now, what is a defense mechanism? You know, it could be isolation, it could be repression, it could be all these things, you know, that people use to control their feelings. So some people like to control their feelings and control their pain. They don't want to feel very much, so they use defenses. You know, like laughter could be a defense. Right? And so you got two people who are now never going to feel bad because they make a joke about everything. Now they get together. And laughter is their defense, and they collaborate in their defense. That's good. Or you get one person who's depressed, and the other person's a jokester. And the jokester makes the depressed person feel better, these codependent relationships. And so now the depressed person is now laughing, still in your defenses. The depression could be a defense. How about isolation? A lot of people are isolationists. They don't like to even see people. Two people get together, they isolate themselves from the world, another defense. They are, the strength of their bond is dependent on the collaboration of the defenses. What a fascinating concept this is when you think about people that you know. You think, well, maybe their bond is how strongly they love each other. But what if it's in the avoidance of pain? What if it's in repression? A lot of people I know, you know? New England. Relationships. No, I'm only kidding. I always joke about Connecticut. Right? No. But imagine, you know, you're going to have a proper relationship where people aren't allowed to feel things any deeply. We will have no anger reflected in this house. So repress the anger, and the relationship is based on the mutual repression of anger. Or a relationship could be on another defense. How about sex? We're going to sex ourselves into oblivion so we never have to talk. We're just never going to have to talk. We'll just have a hot time, you know, and then our relationship will be based on that. So relationships can be based on the collaboration of two defense systems. This is an intriguing thought. I really think that those of you who are therapists and who do couples therapy, who do marital therapy, may consider this. I want you to look at the defenses of the two people who are your victims and say to yourself, what are their defenses? You know, and what are their defenses and how do their defenses get along? Because here's the proof of it. What happens eventually is the person who has the defenses, one of them starts to grow. And they no longer need to be repressed, for example. Repressed means pushing down your feelings. So they don't repress anymore. Now they're beginning to express themselves. So one person starts to grow. When you have two people who are related on the collaboration of their defenses and one of them starts to grow, it wreaks havoc. It brings chaos into the relationship because the basis of the relationship is we both agree on our defenses. We're going to both intellectualize. What do you mean you don't want to intellectualize anymore? What do you mean you want to be, you want to suddenly start feeling things and talking about feeling? So one person goes to therapy, you know, and starts growing, and the other person starts feeling really at loose ends. It happens. So one definition of a relationship is kids in a crawl space. Another definition of people is two people collaborating on their defenses. This is all pretty maudlin, don't you think? I mean, is there anything good out there? Is there anything out there that's really just based on beauty? Sure. Sure. There's plenty of room for beauty. Plenty of room. But it's hard. It's hard when you're all blocked up or when you got two people who are just really stuck. Stuck in the same thing over and over again. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Let me tell you, learn about men. Learning about men is a great thing if you're somebody who's interested in men. I wish I had enough knowledge about women, but I don't. Nope, I don't. I don't understand all that much. We are doing... But there is a series on men that I think is very valuable you can get, and you could also get a copy of today's program. Let's give a let's give out our number here, 212-209-2900. Let's hear from you on what you have to say about this codependency stuff, in case you were listening before the music. You know, a lot of people just tune in during the music, have no idea what we're talking about. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I've been suffering with depression for 3 years.
Yeah.
And my mother, you know, I depend on my mother for a lot of things. And I don't know how to get rid of my depression because I've been depressed for 3 years and I have major depression.
So what have you tried so far? Do you...
I'm on medication and stuff like that.
What kind of medication are you taking?
Or like Paxil.
Paxil and those kind of things. How's it been working for you?
No, Wellbutrin.
Uh-huh. How's it been working for you?
No.
Doesn't work?
Uh-uh.
You're still depressed?
Yeah, and I go to therapy every day.
And you go to
therapy every day, a day program.
And you do it at a day program at Hillside? Where are you doing
it? Oh, yeah, right.
I thought so, yeah, absolutely.
Tucker Hill?
What?
Tucker Hill.
Yeah.
Long Island Jewish Hospital.
Yeah, I can hear.
Oh, okay.
So you're fighting with, listen, you've been fighting with a heavy load ever since you've been a kid.
Yeah.
You have not had it easy. I mean, since you've been a little boy, there has been problems with drugs, with abuse, with, you know, with fighting, with stealing. All this stuff has been around you all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had problems with it. And your mom has had a tough time with it, too. So
yeah.
She closed down, and you want to help her on one hand, and on the other hand, you want to get help yourself.
Right.
It is very difficult. It takes a long time.
Really rough.
How many years have you been screwed up?
I got sick at 17, then I got better in 8 months. Then all through my life, I was better. Then at 35, I got sick because I had a breakup with a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Well, that's when I got sick.
That's when you got sick.
Yeah, when I got the depression. I had social anxiety before that, and I took Paxil and it worked, but now I have the depression. I feel like a lot of anxiety, nervousness, sometimes suicidal thoughts.
It's very, very difficult. Do you relate those thoughts to, do you talk to your therapist? I'm sure you do. You're in so many programs, I'm sure you do talk about it.
Yeah, and they keep telling me that I keep repeating the same thing over and over about my suicide thoughts, but I never do nothing. But I have bad thoughts because, like, this depression is not lifting.
Yeah, I hear. And you're doing a lot of things. And from what I hear, were you once hospitalized? Did they once have to throw you in the hospital?
Yeah, a couple of times in Jamaica Hospital.
Yeah, I could hear. Something.
I've been hospitalized for a month. And then in the 3 weeks, I was in another hospital. And I was in Flushing Hospital and then Franklin Hospital, Long Island. So I've been hospitalized over the past couple of years.
You know, my heart goes out to you. It's a long recovery, you know what I mean?
It's hard, right?
It's a very long one, because when you've had it as hard as you've had it, you know, it's a hard time coming out of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is this thing about trust the process and getting yourself in order. The one thing I'm going to say is, and I wanted to ask you, what's your first name, by the way?
Dean.
Dean, what do you do about your physical health? Are you paying attention to it at all?
Well, yeah, I get checkups every twice a year.
Uh-huh. How about nutrition?
Yeah, I eat a lot of apples, bananas. I try to eat a little less rice now, less meat, more chicken and fish.
Yeah. You know, you may want to look even more further into that, more further. I like that. You may want to look into that even a little more. I think everything you're doing is probably the best that you could do.
Yeah.
And I think that there may be something that you could do to help deal with these drugs that are in your body,
uh-huh.
helping them pass through. Things like glutathione, things like, you know, that Gary Null talks about.
Yeah, I want to see Gary Null tomorrow at 8:30.
Oh, great. How are you
listening? Yes, and I want to see what he said about depression, about health. Because I listened to him, and he was talking about depression come from a lot of causes, from sugar.
Right. I don't think you're going to find that it just comes from the sugar, but I think if you're going to see Gary tomorrow, make sure you mention to him that you want something that will be an antidote to the drugs that you're taking.
Right. I want to wean myself off the medication. My psychiatrist told me no, because he told me if I weed myself off, he said I would get sick again.
Well, it could be true.
Yeah.
Instead of weeding yourself off it, see what you could take at the same time as you're on your medication to improve your health, and then look at diminishing it. Because what you got to do is you got to build up your immune system.
Right.
You got to get it strong. And that may involve things like green juice and stuff like that.
Yes.
But Gary knows all about that, so right. I'm glad you're going to see him tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, thanks for calling in, Dean.
All right.
Right, bye-bye. Good, right? Good. Good, it's important to understand the different levels of it. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Get it strong. That may involve things.
Hello.
Hi, can you turn that radio all the way down? Hello?
It's Donda. Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I can hear you now. Can you speak? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Good. How are you?
Fine. Is this Armand?
Yes, it is.
Wow. Oh, okay. I'm calling from Turkey. And
from Istanbul.
Yes,
you got
nice.
Through. You got through. How nice. You've been trying to do that. Oh, what a wonderful thing. This person, what's your name?
Pinar. It's P-I-N-A-R, Pinar.
Pinar. And Pinar is calling us from Turkey, and Pinar listens on the internet when she can get it. And this is a great compliment for you to be calling in. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the program. I appreciate it. This is like my life source. Yeah, I mean, a different culture, and I really need to hear people talk about stuff that you talk about. So, and I wanted to say that I was, like, fighting depression, and one thing that helped me a lot was a book called Depression Free for Life.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about a lot of the stuff that Maria talks about, and nutrition, and, you know, treating yourself nice. And I believe you can do it without... I was able to get off a lot of antidepressants with the help of this book and also nutrition. So I wanted to say that. And then about the codependency, I wanted to, like, say, I don't know, but for whatever reason, I always, always pick up unavailable people.
Yeah, you're kind of attracted to people who are out of reach, right? But they're kind of there, but they're really emotionally unavailable.
That's right.
Right? And this is kind of the pattern that you've been with for a long period of time. What was your father like? Was he available?
He was an alcoholic, so...
That answers that.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard for an alcoholic to be... Not an alcoholic, but a person who's an alcoholic can very often be too available. And at other times, totally unavailable. Because the mood swings so much.
So, I've been in therapy for a long time, but it's my therapist is back in the States. I'm looking for a new one here. And this is kind of like the last thing left that I want to really work on. And
I understand. I understand. So there you are now looking for an unavailable therapist. Because you're in Istanbul. Let me ask you something, Pinar. In Istanbul, is there any other radio? Like, I mean, what is it like to hear WBAI where you are? You know, I mean, does anybody else listen besides you?
I don't think so.
Do you turn any of your friends on and say, "Here we are in Istanbul. I want you to listen to this."
I got a couple of calls. I know.
You know, I got a call from Iraq. I think we had someone from Iraq, someone from Iran. I had, we've had some calls from around the world, but I tell you, it's kind of amazing to think what a gift this is, that in some of the places who wouldn't even consider for a moment some of these concepts, you know, that they've got someone like you there, just at least spreading the word around. It's such a nice thing. Well, Pinar, I want to thank you for calling in. I am so glad you got through. I know you've sent me a couple of emails. Whenever you need
me. Did you get the music also?
I got the music. I played it on the air. It was fabulous.
Oh, really?
Fabulous. In fact, I ordered, that was a jazz album, which surprised me because, you know, he's a Turkish person who's doing the music. Ordered the music. I'm waiting for it to come in.
I'm so happy.
Wanted to get one of his originals. What was the name of the saxophone?
Yuhanai Shayan.
Yeah.
That's his name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll send you more stuff. I mean, I'm studying at the musicology, so I always have good music. So.
Yes, great.
Which I love the music you play, too, so thanks a lot.
Sure, my pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That was Istanbul, my friend. And the dance, I love it. I love it. And 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi,
hello.
Armand.
Hi there.
Wow, how wonderful. Istanbul.
How about that, huh?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Rand and Mr. Rack. I didn't hear too many people from there yet.
Yeah, no, we had. I actually had a person who was depressed and who was there. I had one person from Afghanistan who called in. Because he was, he found himself depressed because of, you know, a lot that was going on there. And he wanted to consult with me, and we did a telephone consultation from Afghanistan.
Wow.
Here to New York. It was kind of remarkable.
Yeah, so great. WBAI. Yep. So wonderful. Hi, Pinar.
And I'm Pinar, right. Hi to you. Right, from New York. And
wow. You know, codependency, I wanted to talk about that because I've been in a relationship for 4 years, and I was a codependent person, and I'm living by myself, and I can't even imagine having somebody around right now. it seems like, you know, crazy to have somebody around. You know, it's like they would bug me. I have my own little things that I do.
What's your name?
Pat.
Pat. You know, Pat, I think you're not in the minority. I think that most...
Anymore.
No. I think always. I think here's what the story is. I think people mostly have dysfunctional relationships because they want to be alone. It's so easy to pick a relationship where you wind up not talking to the other person and you wind up in separate rooms because you really want to be on your own. You really don't want to be bothered. So what you do is you pick relationships that are miserable and you keep them going and you stay in them because you want to be alone. Now, this is as if... Do you need to answer the phone?
No, that's the facts.
Oh, that's the facts.
Yeah, that's fine.
I like the way you say that. That's the facts.
Yeah.
So this idea of being alone, nobody likes to admit to it. Nobody likes to say, you know, I'm really a loner. And there are many men and many women out there who I believe are loners. They say, I don't want to be impinged by somebody else. So what they do is they pick a relationship that's not going to work on purpose. Because they want to be alone. So I think this is not such a bad thing. I think people, if they could admit to the fact, like you, that they can't imagine wanting to be bothered by anybody else invading their space.
I can imagine.
All the more power to you.
Mm-hmm.
So how
long? Well, it's very peaceful.
It is peaceful.
Well, it's been about 4 years. You were going to ask me how long?
Yeah, 4 years, right?
Yeah, 4 years, and I was in a relationship where, what was that you said, I think you had on your other show before where the person wasn't really even communicating with me, and then you just mentioned something else that it was a sexual thing. You know, just all sexual.
Uh-huh.
You know, pretty much that was great, and that was it. You know what I mean? And then
Sure. There
was no conversation afterwards, nothing like that. So I got tired, and I said, oh, that's it. That's it. Can't take it anymore. You know, either I need something more than this or whatever, or I'll stay by myself for a while and work on myself. And it's been 4 years, and I'm telling you, it's been very wonderful because I don't have to pick up any emotions of anybody, you know, the feelings and things like that.
I got you, Pat. I fully understand. You sound like an awful nice person.
Well,
and you certainly are part of this WBAI family. Thanks for calling
in. Oh, I love
you
guys. Okay.
Great.
Have a birthday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, that wonderful honesty of WBAI. I kind of love it. I love the fact that the people are so clear and so honest. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're going to have to be going this time. We're going to continue this on Thursday. Wednesday, Roberta Achi will be back with us, and we will continue our series on human sexuality. Special thanks to Jana Limonides for this music today. And I want to, if you want a copy of today's program, or if you want to get the entire men's series about men, you would call 212-757-4488. And we've been having a lot of trouble with our phones lately, my friends. So if you want a backup number in case you're a listener who's been trying to call us, it's 757-5555. So you got two of them. 757-4488, 757-5555. Be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.
On 2 p.m., stay tuned for the Tuesday Arts Magazine. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio.